Good evening, everybody. We are the Tri-State Sports Guys, coming to you live from beautiful downtown Norwalk, Connecticut. I'm Mike DePalma, alongside my co-host, Danny Santarella. We got Neil calling in from the Hoboken Studios. Neil, you with us, brother?
I am now. Let's do this.
Yeah, there we go. I was going to say, maybe I don't have the volume up here, but we got Neil on. Tony C is out on assignment here, so we're doing some double duties. We got a nice show here. We're going to put a bow on the Giants season with Harry Carson calling in about 10 minutes, which will be fantastic. We're going to let Neil take the bull by the horns on that one. And then maybe talk a little bit about the Giants, the Jets. A little, nice little late season. Why don't we just, before we get into that, I'll just tell you about my little our little two-week vacation here.
Can I just say Happy New Year to everybody else?
Happy New Year from Dan Santarella.
Can we be gentlemen about this little
thing? I mean, how long? I mean, it's a weekend of the New Year.
I haven't seen you guys.
I know. We are like one of those places where, like, you know, like in some of the sitcoms, like, oh, after the show, we all hang out.
Yeah,
we go our separate ways.
Like,
I didn't hear from any one of you guys.
No.
I didn't get a Merry Christmas from any of you guys.
I don't like you, though.
I didn't get a Hey, Happy New Year from any of you guys.
Me and Neil did
both. Yeah, Neil went out somewhere. I mean, Neil, how was your Christmas, buddy? You're like Uncle Neil. I saw you all over Facebook holding babies. I like that. I like that sensitive side.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to do that full time just yet, but I'm willing to pitch in here and there. And let me just say, it's an unspoken bond between us three. I mean, I don't need to text you to know that you're having a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. I just know it.
You just feel it in your bones.
I did see those baby pictures though with him. I thought he was like running for office.
I thought it was. He's just compiling like a list of photos for like JDate or some Match.com or something like that. I mean, those are all potential profile pics.
Yeah, they were.
Like, hey, you know, I just, you know what I like to do? I like to spend my weekends with my niece and my nephew.
He really is.
It really is. I actually spent New Year's down in Miami.
Yeah.
South Beach. Right? Ever been to South Beach?
No.
I'll tell you, it's a lot different than I thought. I mean, it was ridiculously expensive, more expensive than like Manhattan prices. Beers, $9, $10, like at any bar. And then, like, the buildings look like dilapidated. It's like a falling apart malaria,
yeah.
But it's weird. It's a very weird scene. But I said something on my, like, personal Facebook page. I want to share the story. I'm sure you saw it. So on the day of the Jets-Miami game, we went down there for that. I'm wearing my Chad Pennington jersey, a beautiful wife cutter Revis jersey on. We get up about 9 o'clock. We're walking down Ocean Drive, Ocean Avenue, whatever it is, going to get some breakfast, turn up one of the side streets, and I hear some guy yell, "Who sucks more, the Knicks or the Jets?" So I'm thinking it's going to be some D-bag, you know, Miami Dolphins fan. I turn around. It's Spike Lee on a bicycle being followed by what I assume is his son or something. So I didn't know what to say. I turn around, and I just went, "Knicks." And he just laughed, waved, and just kept going. And Erica's like, "Is that Spike Lee?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And she starts trying to run down the street after him. Like, he's going to now, like, bond with us. That was it. And then people were like, "Why didn't you? You should have said something about the show." I'm like, "You understand that we have this mixed emotion. I'm like swelling up. Like, I'm going to have to fight somebody." You turn around and it's Spike Lee on a bicycle.
That's pretty cool.
On a Schwinn, just tooling around.
I love that guy, by the way. Not for his Knicks fan stuff. I just like his movies, his opinions on things.
I was a lot of his starstruck. Yeah, it was one
really?
Of those. Yeah, it was one of those moments. Yeah, I mean, what would you have done? I mean, there could have been. You know, you play back in your mind, like, I should have hit the net.
Yeah.
But what are you going to do? I mean, you would have never in a million years, you could have stopped time and said, I'll give you a million guesses who you're going to turn around and see, and I wouldn't have picked Mike Lee.
No.
Neil, would you have been able, I mean, you're a comedian by trade. Would you have been able to, like, off the cuff say something funny to Spike Lee?
Be like, "Oh, man, that's a Spike Lee joint."
Neil would definitely make trombone noises.
Yeah, he would have had on his phone like a little pre-recorded trombone noise. But I will tell you this, though, I'm at the game, and it was just, as a Jets fan.
Who won that game?
You know, the Jets pulled that game out, but I will tell you this. Erica was worried a little bit at the beginning, like, "Oh, we can't wear our Jets jerseys today." And I'm like, "Look, the Dolphins fans in the Northeast are way more passionate than the Dolphins fans in Miami." And I couldn't hit the nail on the head more. I mean, we got in the stadium about a half hour early. We had taken a shuttle there. It wasn't like my pregame. I had like a cocktail on a shuttle, whatever it was. And we get there and get in the stadium. And there's like a little bar. So we're standing there. There's a decent amount of Jets jerseys. And guy just comes like up to me. He's just like at the game by himself, I believe. And just is like, hey, man, you're not one of those, like, jerk fans. I'm like, nah, man, you're just coming down here. And he tells me about his entire life, his carpentry company, where he lived in Ridgefield, Connecticut for a spell. And that's how the whole thing was. I sat next to some 30-year season ticket holder who just told me, he came down from Atlanta.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
In a word, is that stadium as much of a dump as it always appeared, like when the Marlins play there? I don't know if it's just because it's empty. Is it a nice place?
Honest to God, it was a very nice place. I would put that ahead of MetLife. Honest to God, right now. The new MetLife is worse than the old one. I honestly thought it was a very nice stadium. We were down in the 100 level towards kind of the back. I will tell you this, that the face value of that ticket down in the 100 level was the same price as mine in the upper deck at MetLife.
Yeah,
and the guy told me, up in the upper deck, you think it's a $30. It wasn't sold out. I mean, I'm sure it was sold out, but it wasn't packed for a game that would have got people in. It was weird. It wasn't a super passionate thing. I didn't get one person like really bash us for wearing Jets jerseys. There was a decent amount of Jets jerseys like scattered around. So it was a good time. But it was to see that happen.
Yeah.
And be there for it and have a Jets go 8-8. And then you come out the next day and Rex Ryan, who really has us to thank for his job, because when Woody Johnson was on, we lobbied pretty hard. I think that I would have liked him to maybe shoot me a text, maybe something to the Tri-State Sports guys inbox. Hey,
well,
Mike, thanks for what you did.
You don't have the kind of relationship that I have with Ernie.
How many times did you talk to Ernie over the break?
Twice. Yeah, he called me at 12:01. Wish me a happy new year. And we that was about it.
Ernie was up at 12:01.
Yeah, we were talking about the Japanese pitcher's name there.
Tanaka?
Tanaka. We were talking about Tanaka, yeah.
He said he is from Puerto Rico.
Yeah. No, that was a lot of fun. And I was happy for you guys, man. I'm not a Dolphins guy at all. I was happy for you guys when they did stick it to him a little bit. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You had to feel nice. I know your brother is a Dolphins fan, which... is that appalling to you, like in your family?
My uncle's a Dolphins fan. Very
weird.
You
like either of them?
Well, but I honestly think my brother became a Dolphins fan. It's just like one of those like rebellion things against my father.
Yeah.
Which is why I told you, that's why I became a Nets fan, was like a rebellion thing against my brother. He was a big Knicks fan. So, I just thought like, I got to do something different here. And I think that's what it was. Like, he just liked the Dolphins because my uncle liked them, and I was Dan Marino. My brother was 175, so he was like, hit the Marino time at the right time. The Jets stunk,
You want to know what happened to me over the break? Just those three things. I don't talk much NFL, but I saw my father excited for the National Football League for the first time in ages, and I'm going to tell you why. He's a lifelong Raiders fan.
Yeah, he sure is.
The 60s.
Yeah.
All he heard was that Johnny Manziel may get drafted by the Raiders, and he watches a ton of college football. He was over the moon.
Yeah?
About that. That's just my brief little NFL aside, other than the fact that I did watch all the playoff games that I texted you about. Just Johnny Manziel excited him that much. Is that
right?
I don't think Johnny Manziel is going to be a good pro. That's just my opinion. But my dad is now ecstatic about this. If they don't get Johnny Manziel, he might become like a Chiefs fan. I don't know what he's going to do. But
yeah. You wonder where he'll go. Yeah,
I don't think Cleveland in there. That's what I heard. I mean, who knows? Who knows? If the Vikings got him, if he dropped, that'd be great. He's at least exciting, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on my articles to, rank where different guys, who will be basically quarterback in the Jets next year, and a couple with, guys on the roster now, guys available in the draft, and then, free agents. And, Manziel, I mean, I'm doing him as odds advisor. It's going to be a far shot in hell if he's going to line up on the Jets. I just can't stand the guy, so it's one of those things where, of course he was a Jet, I'd love him.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like I'm not one of those like phony guys. It's like one of our producers who claims he's not going to like the Yankees.
Right.
If they write it, I'm at least honest with myself that I will like anyone who can just throw a football and win some games. So, but I it's not going to happen. But you never know. I mean, he traded up for Sanchez.
Right.
Could a trade happen?
I immediately rooted for Brett Favre the minute his plane landed in Quincy.
Yeah,
it was like, you know what I mean?
I hadn't hated him.
Yeah, I always respected him. Thought he was unbelievable, but I hated him. Minute his plane landed and he signed that contract, just a switch flip,
Yeah.
So anybody else, you're right. Anybody in the phony, including our lovely producer, Matthew.
Yeah.
He was with those guys, so.
Yeah. We'll take a quick commercial break. And then I'm going to call and we're going to see if we can get our good friend, personal friend of the show here, Harry Carson on the line. We're going to get to some bowl talk, right? We're going to get to some NFL talk. And then possibly we'll get to a little Hall of Fame talk. We'll try to take a quick test. Right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year, you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score. With an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, O Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
We're back. We are the Tri-State Sports Guys. Should be hearing from our guest any minute now. Neil, let's talk a little bit about this guest, Neil. Is this a guy that obviously is a Hall of Famer, fantastic linebacker? Is this a guy you remember from your childhood? I mean, I even remember him, so I know I'm asking a loaded question there. But what are your memories of a guy like Harry Carson?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I first started paying attention to the Giants, I'd say probably in 85 when I was just turning five. And he went on to play until 88. So, you know, it was the formidable years, you know, is when I really solidified and entrenched my place in Giants history and Giants lore as a fan. So, you know, I mean, Harry was always, you know, he was just a mean-looking dude. There's no two ways about it. And he was the leader of that group. And when they lost him in 88, you kind of wondered, you know, who's going to step up, and luckily they had some guys that were able to, but, you know, it's just the images of him, you know, specifically when he caught the I think it was a fake field goal, for a touchdown in 86, I believe. I mean, it's just burned into my memory forever.
Yeah, well, Neil, this is going to be a lifelong dream for you, buddy, because we are about to go to the Football Hall of Famer, 9-time Pro Bowler, Mr. Harry Carson. Mr. Carson, are you with us, sir?
I am. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm going to turn it over here to our co-host, Neil, who you'll love. He's a diehard Giants fan, knows all about you. He's got some questions for you. We're very happy to have you, so I'm going to turn you over to Neil right now.
Sure.
Hey, Harry, how you doing? Lifetime Giants fan. It's an honor and a pleasure to speak with you tonight. We want to thank you for taking time out of your night to speak with us and to really talk some Giants football. Obviously, not met – the Giants didn't meet expectations this year. I mean, there's no two ways about it. It was the first time they went 0-6 in their first six games since 1976. I believe you might have been a rookie that year, so you can speak more to that. So, I mean, first off, at what point during this season did you realize this team has no shot?
You know, I think it was probably in the Denver game. The Dallas game, you know, they had six turnovers, but they lost by 5 points, and yeah, I felt that they could come back from that. You know, if you're only going to lose a game by 5 points with six turnovers, no, those are correctable mistakes. And it just sort of got worse from there. And, you know, Denver is a very good football team, as we've seen during the course of this football season. And, you know, from that point, they just did not look good, period. They didn't look aggressive. They looked like they were outmanned. You know, they just did not look like a very good football team. And quite frankly, you know, during that stretch, I was starting to think that they might not win a game during the course of this entire football season. And so I was thinking already about the first pick in the draft. But, you know, they fought and they came back and, you know, they won a few games. And so they did not quit. And so, you know, it's a team that at times during the course of this football season was not very good in different areas. And, you know, they had some trying times during the course of this football season.
Yeah, and I think the one bright spot that you can take away from it, you know, I tend to be a Debbie Downer or a negative Nancy about things. I'm a pessimist most of the time. But, you know, they did go 7-3 down the stretch, down the 10 games after going winless in the first six. But, you know, those wins, I don't see them as quality wins. They were playing teams that were in a state of flux, really banged up. You know, when they beat the Eagles, they didn't have Nick Foles. Michael Vick was not himself. And, you know, the Vikings, they caught Freeman his first or second week in camp. So, you know, is that something that, you know, is a bright spot for the Giants, or do you think that this is something where they really need to tear down and build up again?
You know, quite frankly, a win is a win. You really don't question it. You know, years from now, nobody's going to wonder whether the competition was up to a certain level or not. You know, they're going to refer to the wins and the losses. There won't be any asterisks, you know, by, you know, whatever the record is. But, yeah, I forgot your question already.
No, that's okay. I mean, what it comes down to for me is, you know, do you subscribe to the theory that the 7-3 finish was a sign of hope, or do you think that this team is not responding to Tom Coughlin and that they need a change of guard at head coach? Is his message getting old?
No, I don't think his message is getting old. I think the guys respect Tom. And, you know, quite frankly, it's not necessarily Tom. It's not necessarily Kevin Gilbride, the offensive coordinator. You know, it's the players. And I think, you know, if you had a stronger offensive line, I think that you would have been able to get some things accomplished on the offensive side of the ball. If you had a stronger offensive line, you would have given the quarterback an opportunity to get the ball off. You know, if you had a stronger offensive line generally, you're going to have a strong defensive line because they have to go against each other in practice, and they build each other up. So, you know, quite frankly, there were weaknesses on this team that had not been addressed. And they have to be addressed right now. If you think that, you know, you're going to make some cosmetic changes between, you know, this off season and the beginning of the football season, if you don't shore up those areas that really need to be fixed up, then you're going to have the same problems next year. So, you know, the offensive line really needs to be upgraded, you know, tremendously. I don't care if you go out and get, you know, 100 offensive linemen. You're going to have to put the best five guys out on that line at the beginning of next season. If you don't, then, you know, the Giants are going to have some they're going to repeat what happened this year, even with the quality that they had at the running back position, David Wilson and Andre Brown, you know, Eli will probably have the same year that he had last year if the offensive line is not addressed.
Well, and, you know, those are the two big problem areas. And, you know, despite those, I was still extremely critical of number 10. Can you give us your assessment of Eli? I mean, was this just an off year all year, or are we seeing the decline of Eli Manning and we're seeing, you know, his career start to deteriorate?
Well, you know, if I was a quarterback and I didn't have time to get the ball off, you know, I probably would be regressing as well. I think that you know, there's still some good value in Eli Manning, and you know, however you want to look at him as declining or whatever, you know, Eli started with the Giants in such a way that, you know, a lot of people thought that he was a bust, you know, when he first came to the Giants, because he made a lot of mistakes. He threw a lot of turnovers, threw a lot of interceptions, but, you know, he certainly has proven that he can play the game, and I think that, and this is just me, I think that he can still get the job done. You know, if you want to throw the towel in on him, you know, now, I mean, that's fine. But I think that he's still a pretty good quarterback. I think you have to give him another year, Turbin, if, you know, he's on the downside, I mean, really on the downside of his career. And I think that if he doesn't get the same production from the inside, like what he got from Victor Cruz, if he doesn't get the same kind of production on the outside with those guys, you know, playing X and Z receivers, you know, he really will have some serious problems.
Well, and one of the ways that that they can improve the offensive line is through free agency. You know, I don't know that there are too many big-time free agents out there that they can sign and can come in and make a difference. I saw that Michael Orr from Baltimore is available. But let's talk about some other free agents on the Giants that could be leaving, one of which is wide receiver Hakeem Nicks. I mean, you saw every game. I was even more critical of Hakeem Nicks than I was Eli Manning. It just looked like, you know, his mannerisms, his body language on the field, not going after balls, giving up on routes, and the fact that he wasn't able to get in the end zone this year. What are your thoughts on Nicks? Do you think he returns as a Giant next year?
You know, I don't have – I'm very fortunate in that I don't have to make decisions. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm sort of like a fan. I'm a fan like everybody else. So I really don't get to make – or influence anyone's decisions in regards to, you know, whether someone should stay or whether they should go. I think Hakeem Nicks is still a pretty good player. Again, if you want to jettison him and, you know, allow him to go someplace else, I'm pretty sure he'll do a good job wherever he goes. I think there's a lot of talent at the wide receiver position of the Giants. I think that I can't give you all the names, but a young guy who really played well in the last couple of games. I think, you know, they have to find some way for him to get into the game and be able to contribute. You know, there are a couple of other guys who are, you know, pretty decent. But, you know, I think everybody's job really is in jeopardy because, you know, changes certainly are going to be made. Who knows what's going to happen with Hakeem Nicks, but, you know, the I don't want to say pessimistic, the optimistic side of me thinks that perhaps, you know, he should get another year. He wants to come back, and I think if you give him another year, I think, you know, after sort of, you know, having the year that he has had, being, I think he was embarrassed with the way he played this year and what he did not accomplish. I think that, you know, that should be an incentive enough to you know, sort of light a fire under him to get him going for next year.
Yeah, and I agree with you that they need to get him into the mix early on in the game with maybe a slant or a bubble screen. Just get the ball in his hands in the first on that first drive, the first set of plays, and let him get into the groove and get his confidence behind him. Now, another key pickup they had during the season, John Beeson. He plays your position. You probably had a close eye on him. Can you give us your evaluation of John Beeson and what he brings to the ball club? Because from what I saw, it was a guy who was high intensity. He looked like a leader on the field. His pass coverage was a little suspect here and there, but overall I think that he provided a boost to that defense. Can you speak to that a little?
Yeah, I think John Beeson was a tremendous asset to the Giants' defense, but also, I mean, to the team as a whole, because yeah, he's a guy who was not even on the roster at the beginning of the football season, but I think when he came in, I think defensively, you know, they were able to stop the run, especially getting to the outside as easily as they were getting to the outside. I think that helped tremendously. I think his leadership on defense was felt. The other guy, and I know we're just talking defense right now, but, you know, I like Peyton Hillis as a player who came in right off the street and made his presence felt. And it's ironic that, you know, two guys who weren't even on the team, you know, opening day, I think they made their presence felt during the course of the football season. And I think that the toughness of those guys sort of was contagious for the rest of the guys. And, you know, there are a couple of guys who did play well during the course of the season, like Antrell Roll. And you have to have guys like a Peyton Hillis and a John Beeson who are going to, you know, stand up and play. And, you know, if you get slapped, you slap back as those guys did. And, you know, hopefully there'll be a different mindset, you know, next year from opening of training camp that, you know, guys are going to be ready to compete.
I mean, you brought up some excellent points. I mean, the Giants were really hurting at the running back position when Peyton Hillis came in basically off the streets. He wasn't on a roster and was able to fill in during that Minnesota game and you know, was not only a stopgap, but actually was sparking the offense and moving the ball along. I'd love to see him back on the team. You also brought up Antrell Roll. He got snubbed by the Pro Bowl. He's a very outspoken guy. You know, I've had my reservations about him in the past, and especially in the beginning of this season, but he really came around towards the end of the season, and, you know, you'd obviously like to see him continue in that role. In terms of looking ahead to next year, it's not looking pretty. And, you know, the Giants have to go up against the NFC West. That's, you know, the Cardinals, the Niners, the Rams, and the Seahawks. The NFC West is arguably one of the best divisions in the NFL. Vast improvements over the past two or three years. They then have to face the Falcons and the Lions, and you can't let those two teams fool you. The Falcons had an off year, obviously, but they played tough throughout. And the Lions, of course, you know, I always blame the Lions' downfall on their coach. Their coach is no longer with them. And then they got to go up against the AFC South, which is never easy. So in terms of next year, do you think that's going to be a playoff year if they just make one or two moves, or do you think they're going to be, you know, grinding through another 7-9, 8-8 year?
Well, you know, I don't really worry about who you're going to play. You know, if you want to look at, you know, the schedule, that's fine. But even as a player, it really doesn't matter who you play, because every time you step on the field, everybody's good. Everybody is a pro, and anything can happen. And, you know, you look at, you know, the Giants during the course of this football season, you know, there are probably some people who looked at the Giants and either wrote them up as a win at the beginning of the season or during the offseason, or wrote them as a loss for their respective teams. So, you know, I don't get into that game because I know that anything can happen. But you just have to wait and see what happens during the course of the off season. Who comes in? There's going to be a new offensive coordinator. Will Eli rebound after having the disastrous year that he's had? Will it be a different mindset of the guys who are going to be left on that squad? And on and on and on. I mean, there's just so many things can happen, you know, during the course of an off season. And so I don't really count the Giants out. You know, they have guys who have gotten it done before, and hopefully, you know, they're able to bounce back next year. I'm not going to say, you know, go to the Super Bowl, but at least be more competitive than they were this past year.
Well, you know, again, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I'll leave you with this. My mother and sister live in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Now, I know you were born in Florence. Do you ever make it down there?
I get to Myrtle Beach occasionally.
Yeah? Well, if you're in the area, maybe we can hook up and grab a beer or something and talk Giants history.
I drink ginger ale and water.
Hey, you'll be designated driver. That sounds good to me. Well, thanks, Aaron. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I would love to if I ever get down there, but I don't get down very much.
All right. Well, I'll keep an eye out for you when I visit. Again, thanks so much for talking with us. This has been a once-in-a-lifetime experience for me, and I wish you all the best in whatever you're doing.
All right. Thanks a lot.
There you have it. There's the great Harry Carson and Neil Lynch just breaking down Giants football there. I like that out of you, Neil. And you're over there just asking him out. I like that. That's the thing that Dan didn't have the chutzpah to do when he had Ernie Banks on. But you did it, Neil.
Well,
it was a fantastic interview.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you want to talk about hard-nosed guys. I mean, he's the definition of hard-nosed. You know, Bill Belichick, who is like lacks all human emotion, considers Carson the best all-around linebacker he's ever coached. And he was an assistant coach for the Giants for 12 years. So, I mean, the dude was a member of a linebacker crew called the Crunch Bunch, and then his defense was so good that they called it the Big Blue Wrecking Crew. I mean, they gave the defense two nicknames. That's how good they were with him. So, I mean, the guy's a legend, and, you know, I mean, when he speaks, people listen, you know?
Yeah, no, that was fantastic. And he seemed like a real cool guy. I mean, he loved your introductory request. He laughed for about a minute. I liked that out of him.
But
that was cool. I mean, you know, it's guys like Harry Carson, you know, obviously Giants fans know him. But, like, you know, when he got in, he was one of those guys that, like, Giants fans were clamoring for him to get in. But I think around the country he's not as well known. But, you know, one of the best linebackers of all time, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, he led the Giants in tackles for 5 seasons. I mean, you look at some of his other accomplishments, and he's a member of the New York Giants Ring of Honor, Super Bowl champion, 2-time first-time All-Pro. I mean, and the guy took his licks, and he keeps on ticking. So, I mean, you got to give props to him. If I shake his hand, mine will break. I know that for sure.
Still to this day. Oh, yeah. If you bump into him down in the golf course at the Myrtle Beach, they'll call him Fourth Ring of Lynch. All right. Let's take another quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to get to some bowl talk. So Dan can open his lips a little bit here. The Tri-State Sports guys, we'll be right back.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They were in rioters, we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. Is anyone out there?
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys on a Wednesday night. First show of 2014. Neil, was that like your... I mean, we all know the Ernie Banks thing was like the highlight of Dan's career here on the show. Was that your guy? I mean, Harry Carson? Is that somebody like, you know... When we finally pull the plug on this show, which literally could be any week, you're going to be able to say, wow, I talked to Harry Carson for 20 minutes.
I mean, it's up there. It's top five, no doubt. You know, and I know Harry and LT had their squabbles and their differences over the years. You know, LT's obviously the flashier guy, and I think a lot more people attached to him. But I mean, you know, Harry Carson. I was telling Dan this before Harry came on. Harry Carson was one of the reasons I decided to play football, and I love football so much. I mean, you just looked at the guy in his uniform, the way that he played, and just a fierce competitor, and, you know, he made me want to grow a mustache, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, and you know what, you wear it well, you know that. You did. You
I've got a beard now, so, I mean, I can't stop the hair at this point.
Fantastic. I know, what I liked following you over Christmas break was the pictures of you holding, with your nephew or your niece? Was it, a nephew or a niece?
My niece Kensley.
Your niece Kensley. You'd see, like, early on, you're all clean cut, you're down visiting your mom, and then as the days go by, that beard just starts full. You know, if you just, like, did a time lapse of it, you could actually watch your beard grow on that trip, and I like that.
Yeah, I mean, it got a little itchy towards the end there, but I think, you know, the new girlfriend seems to like it, so I'm not going to be shaving it anytime soon.
Oh, just dropping knowledge on us. We got a little lovely lady. I like that idea. This is 2014. It's a whole new world here. Speaking of whole new worlds, I mean, Dan, you are the resident college football guy.
Yeah.
And your articles were fantastic.
Thank you.
And they grew in popularity as they went on. I think at the beginning people were like, I didn't know what to make of it. But they did. I mean, I'm tracking the hits we got. Towards the end, I mean, you could see right when you would post them, they'd get a bunch of hits. People were sharing them, so people really liked them. But I will tell you this. I got in a little bowl pool, 130 folks.
Do you want to go there, really?
Right away I'm going there. Finished second place, Neil. Out of 100, we had to pick every bowl game, just win or lose. I know that's how you like to pick, Neil.
Yeah.
You're not a spread guy. You're a money line guy, and that's what I like about you because you're old school. So I went old school, picked all the things, and knocked it out of the park. Just killed it, second place. God, you know, I'm not going to share you how much money I want, but let's just say I'm living comfortably in 2014.
Yeah, I think the old adage is her ignorance is awful.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was the chick who wins the pool. That was me. And I honestly, God, I'm going through and I'm like, have I heard Dan mention this team at all? And that's what I was like, yeah, I think I remember him saying, you know, I know you love the UCLA quarterback. You know, I said UCLA there. It was like, and I honestly was. I'm like, you know, I've almost heard Dan. I obviously made the picks long before. We had to make all the picks before.
Yeah.
So it was before any of your articles. But,
That's a good thing.
So it went pretty well. So, Dan, I mean, I'm not a huge college football guy, but
right.
A lot of super exciting games.
Right.
This bowl season. Now, other than the national championship game, what was the game in your mind that was the quintessential bowl game that was worth your time, worth you watching it, out of all the other games?
It's the Sugar Bowl. Alabama, Oklahoma. That was, I mean, I heard a lot of people, I don't listen to a lot of sports radio, as we talk about, but I heard a lot of people on ESPN, things like that, talking about how unprepared Alabama looked. And then Bob Stoops, you know, put a bow on that at the end of the game saying, you know, we're Oklahoma. I mean, like.
All of a sudden now, if you're not an SEC
team. Yeah, I mean, this wasn't New Mexico State coming in there, like putting a beat down on them. Trevor Knight. Quarterback for the Sooners, who I said in my article, I thought, you know, Blake Bell would play. I don't think he took a snap that I saw.
Yeah.
And Knight, player of the game, Sugar Bowl MVP, threw the ball over the place.
Yeah, redshirt freshman?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that was, especially in the early going, Alabama had their wideouts covered.
Yeah.
And he was just putting balls, like probably like Neil was doing back at John Hopkins, was putting the ball in a window. And, I mean, they were covered, so you could see Saban and Kirby Smart, the D coordinator there, had a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
He just did everything.
Do, yeah.
It was unbelievable. That was number one for me. And the second one, really, was Baylor getting beat by UCF. Blake Bortles, I didn't think he would have a game, although Baylor's defense is great. They're athletic. And, you know, he passed all over the place. Bryce Petty didn't play well. Their wideout, Goodley had a – I think two catches for 40 yards or something like that he had. Seeing UCF do that to me was surprising.
Did you see how much that quarterback, what's the guy's name for UCF?
Bortles. Blake Bortles.
He just skyrocketed. I mean, they got him ahead of Johnny Manziel on draft board.
Yeah, they have Bridgewater, Bortles, Manziel.
You buy that? I mean,
no
right?
I got to say this, dude, and I said it in my article covering the Orange Bowl. to me, and again, I get so irritated. I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, Neil played quarterback. You played quarterback. I never did. But I find it hard to believe when these guys go to the combine. And again, these are all guys coming out that aren't going to have senior bowls or the East-West game or the Shrine Bowl or whatever to, you know, put their talents out there. So it's going to be combine and individual team workouts. To me, watching him play, I think Todd Boyd, I'm just saying I don't know enough about mechanics and things. To me, he's the best pro quarterback in terms of translating from college to the pros. I mean, he's got the high ball release that I hear everyone talk about.
Yeah.
He's got the ball way up high. He's really very little dip to him. And I'm stunned constantly that people trash this guy based solely on
that one game
when FSU, which we saw how good they are,
their defense is
come into Death Valley and put a walloping on them. That's one of the best defenses you'll ever see if you watch college football for 100 years. He had a bad game. His line's not great. You know, they got a good running game, some good wide. Sammy Watkins is, I mean, how good is that kid?
Yeah.
What do you have, six?
Well, I know Neil's mom loves Sammy. Neil's mom was all over Facebook about Sammy Watkins. I don't think she's falling to the Giants, though, Neil.
Yeah, she was pretty high on him, and I don't think he's going to fall to 12, but who knows.
Well, here's what I'll say, though. Here's what I worry about Todd Boyd. My brother also is a Clemson fan.
I
hear him talk about Todd Boyd all the time. And I worry about when you have a guy as dynamic as Sammy Watkins. It, you know, like, remember Whedon put up all these crazy numbers. You had Justin Blackman, you know what I mean? Or, you know, working Crabtree at Texas Tech. It's like, I worry about, like, if he didn't have a crush. It's almost like Matthew Stafford. Everybody wants to talk about him. If you take Megatron off that team, Matthew Stafford's a middle-of-the-road quarterback, in my opinion. I don't care what I know. Detroit fans, and there are a bunch of them up here, love the guy. I think you take a big time playmaker like that off your team, then you know he's a middle of the road quarterback. He's got a big arm, but at best he's Jay Cutler. I think that you know I worry about that. I don't know. Like if you said, I don't watch enough of him.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's got all the you know the things that you're saying. You know the things you could check off your checklist with the high release point and all the rest. I just worry about something like that.
He reminds me a lot of. You know, he's not quite as thick, but he reminds me of, like, McNabb. When I saw McNabb play at Syracuse and obviously with the Eagles and into the league, play with the Vikings for that awful year. He just has enough speed that he makes things happen. He's extremely smart. Every coach, every coordinator in the ACC, you hear talk about him. And people get into that stuff with white, black, and all, and it's garbage, first of all.
Yeah.
He's extremely smart. You hear the kid talk. He knows everything he just saw in the game. He's a smart kid. All the mechanical stuff, I don't know, but it looks good to me. I watched Bridgewater against, I mean, the ACC is not great. I mean, they have the national champ now, but it's not great. You watch with Bridgewater in the American Conference, and it's like, we could put a team together and beat Memphis.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, we could
go beat Rutgers. You know, so I don't understand how him and Bortles get this unbelievable amount of credit.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, Bortles goes in to the Fiesta Bowl against the Baylor defense that gave up yards to everybody. They are athletic, but they're not, whatever it is. I don't know if Phil Bennett's the D-coordinator, he used to be the head coach of K-State. I don't know if he doesn't know what he's doing, but it's not a great defense. So Bortles has a great game, and everyone wants to go, see, look, he threw for this many. And
yeah.
I mean, look how accurate he was in his composure and whatever. It's like, well, you know, you'd like to see him go into, like, Baton Rouge and play LSU at a night game in October and see, does he just throw the ball in the place?
Yeah.
Does he go out to Stanford against that defense or Florida State against that defense and just throw the ball over?
Yeah.
At least with Boyd, you've seen him play a Florida State and Ohio State. You've seen him play some decent team, Miami.
I think that makes a huge difference.
It should. I mean, I don't know why I was amazed by that, and we're seeing it, you know, with Tebow. What always stung me with him was how can you be one of the best college quarterbacks ever, and then they just knew he was going to stay.
Yeah.
And he's kind of, you know, been that way.
Yeah.
But now every single guy that runs any kind of spread look, like Boyd does with that Clemson offense, they're going to be the worst players ever. But yet Manziel's going to be phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I don't get that. How's Manziel going to be great?
Yeah.
Bridgewater and Bortles are going to be great. I mean, to me, Todd Boyd's playing in the Orange Bowl. Did you watch the Orange Bowl?
Yeah, I did. I watched almost the whole game, yeah.
He really was. And that's not a great defense. Ohio State,
I mean, Sammy Watson.
Unbelievable.
So good, though. What do you have, 200 and some odd yards or 15 catches?
16 catches for 220 or whatever that was. And, you know, that's Bradley Roby, that corner that covered him all game. That kid's all Big Ten, second-team All-American last year.
Yeah.
He couldn't even – I mean, he couldn't stay with Aberderis in the Wisconsin game, which is why I said in my article, that's going to be a matchup Watkins wins.
Yeah.
And if you can't guard Jared Aberderis, you have no shot against Samuel.
Yeah. You know what I like about the bowl games is, as an NFL fan, that's for me like my introduction to these guys in the draft. And one of the things you pointed out in one of your articles about the Missouri game was they have a stable of big-bodied, athletic wide receivers. And, man, they do. And what's the kid with the two names? The two last names?
Beckham.
Yeah. So, but he's only a true sophomore, so he's not coming out. But that kid, I mean, they do. Those are the guys. Because I'm just looking as a Jet fan, like, which one of these guys can you get, you know, in that first-round pick? Because I don't think the Jets, I think it's 15 or 16, I don't think they need to go out and get a quarterback at that spot.
Right.
I think they need to get a veteran, and then maybe add a guy, and I'll tease my article a little bit, maybe add a guy a little later on in the draft to take to compete, you know. I look at those guys, and you're exactly right. I mean, those are NFL. Those are all they have three Alshon Jeffries on it.
I don't know how – I don't even know where those kids are from. So I don't know if those are Texas. Maybe they're Missouri kids. I mean,
the kid with the two names was like all he was the player, Gator player of the year, or whatever. He's from Missouri.
He's
been suspended. I mean, he had some problems, but boy, he is a stud.
You texted me during that game. We were watching it, and you said how good Franklin was.
Well, if anything looked good, I just never saw somebody more confident.
Yeah,
like he would, you know, every time he got a shotgun, he would take that snap and just flat footed. That's how Byron Leftwich, if you remember, was at Marshall. And it's just like, you know, the exact opposite of, like, Peyton Manning, who's got – I mean, he worked him, but he's got the big happy feet. You know, it's just like his feet are always moving. This guy looked like he was playing with a red jersey on, like nobody could touch him. Like he just took the snap. He would even – he'd just, like, kind of glide back a step and just kind of, like, I don't know, like, which 6'5 guy should I throw to?
Yeah. I mean, that's –
The confidence of him is what I like.
Yeah, like you said, it's a stable wideout. It's a good line. It's an excellent offense. I mean, you know, I get tired of people poo-pooing these spread looks. It's still football, and I'm stunned by
exactly.
it. Like, I remember when Navy finally beat Notre Dame. They hadn't beat them since Staubach was there. It was 30-some-odd, 40 years, whatever the hell it was. They finally beat them, and it was Weiss and that staff saying, well, they cut blocked this all game. And it's like, well, their linemen weigh 250. Your D-tackles weigh 340, and they cut block. So did you not watch football league?
Yeah.
They almost implied that it's not football. So when someone sees Missouri play, they're almost – because we both said it leading into the Rose Bowl, the last show we did, that's going to be real football. We're along those lines because it's I-form, pro-form, downhill running. There's no difference. You still got to tackle. You still got to block. So Missouri runs some gadget plays. They run a ton of quick hitters. To me, to say Franklin, who's a senior, isn't a viable pro prospect. Like you said, look how relaxed he looks.
Yeah.
Nothing looks off with him.
Exactly. Nothing looks bigger than him.
Nothing.
You know what I mean? At no point in that game would you watch him and say, like, oh, he looked like the game was a little bigger than him.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like he almost didn't want to be there. Like, it was
just bored.
He was hung over on a Sunday morning playing touch football at New York High. That's what it looked like. It was fantastic. I like guys like that.
And just, let's just, because we're talking about an SEC team real quick. You know, I think that was Neil's post, right, on Tri-State.
Oh, me. You're talking about the SEC thing?
Was that you?
Yeah.
Here's all I want to say.
Go ahead. No,
I know
that listening and didn't see it. So when things, because the reason I said it, people were all over Facebook and Twitter talking about, I told you the SEC was so much better than everybody else, and Florida State didn't beat anybody when it was 21-3. And all they wanted to talk about was, see, this is what happens when you play an SEC team. And all of a sudden they got back into that game, and I said, all you SEC guys, just shh. The ball game.
Yeah.
Don't act like all of a sudden, just because FSU had to go play an ACC team, then it was like they went and played an NFL squad.
Right. Well, first of all, I didn't see any of the stuff that made you go out there and do that. All I want to know is, and it's not from you, from anybody who's listening that is a fan that feels that way, is the argument that the FCC just isn't as good as someone like me says it is, or is it that there's leagues out there that are comparable or God forbid, better than. That's all I want to know because I watch a ton of SEC football.
Neither. It's just that I get annoyed. But I think it's good for college football. It's just like the Yankee fan. It's always good when you have a Goliath sport. It's always good when you have Tiger Woods. It's like the Tiger – of course Tiger Woods is the best player in the world. Still to this day. You know, but it's good to have that so that the people that just want to like I feel like a lot of those big SEC guys in the Northeast, they don't really know what they're talking about. They just know that the SEC is good, so they want to just say, see, SEC, and they just like to just pound their chest about the SEC. Of course they're the best, but it's just that they poo-poo everyone else, so Like, everything else is like, you know, AAA baseball, and this is the show up here in the SEC. And I just get annoyed by it. Of course they're the best.
Yeah.
You know, I just get annoyed by that. It's the same thing. Like, I'm a Big East basketball fan back when the Big East existed. Same thing when Big East teams would fall, and you know, time after time, early on in the NCAA tournament. That's good. As much as it frustrated me as a UConn fan and a Big East fan, it was the same thing. So it's neither that, of course, SEC is the best college football conference and the best conference in any sport collegiately. And there's nobody that compete with it. It's just that, shut up. We get it.
Yeah, see.
That's what annoys me. It has nothing to do with, like, there's no argument to be made.
Right.
I know people want to talk about Pac-10 or whatever they want to talk about. There's no argument to be made. The SEC is clearly the dominant conference in football. But when you start running your mouth and you don't back it up, I feel an obligation to the world to point that out.
Yeah, see, A, I didn't see any of it. B,
yeah, you got defensive. You were like a three-paragraph comment.
You know, the best part.
I love how you blamed it on Neil.
I thought it was Neil. But the second thing is this. I wasn't even crucifying in my mind Neil. Now you. I was just looking at it like, you know what? Because what frustrates me is this. There's people that comment, and I'm not an expert, but there's people that comment on college football that don't know the first thing about it. And the reason that frustrates me is because when the NFL comes up, I feel like I have some footing tonight if we talk about this past weekend's pro games. Because I watch them.
Yeah.
But I don't consider myself an expert. I can't tell you Drew Brees' wideout names, and I know the kid that went to Hofstra, I mean, whatever. But people don't comment on college football until the big games are played.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's people, even on our thread and stuff like that, that make little comments. And I'm not talking about our buddy Paco, because I agree with a lot of what he says. But don't not watch it all year long and then tell me that. Because I took that, like, I never thought FSU was that. For a while, it did look like 100% like they're just getting outplayed by an SEC team. And Auburn, for a while, looked really fast.
Yeah.
I knew they were fast, but they looked discernibly faster than Florida State. But the problem that I have is people want to put other leagues up there from time to time because Stanford's good or Oregon's good or now Florida State is great.
Yeah, I mean, there's still the other good teams.
Yeah, but then what I always look at is take out the top of the league, take out the bottom of the league, look at the middle of the conference. And when you look at the middle of the SEC, you see teams like South Carolina, the youngest team in the country, putting up 10 wins, 11 wins, beating Wisconsin in a bowl game that no one really thought they could win.
Yeah.
Just beat them on the field. All they thought about was Clowney. Georgia injury-riddled all year, still battled back, lost a close one to Nebraska. The middle of that league with the Mississippi schools, LSU was the middle of the pack school this year. It's better by leaps and bounds than what the Big Ten can put up with, like, a Minnesota.
Well,
or what the Pac-12 can put up with Arizona, who beat an awful BC team. I mean, I picked BC, but the middle of that league, you just take a top, bottom, look at the middle, it's way better.
I think the conversation ends with the fact when you look at Auburn last year was 3-9, and they were not a 3-9 team.
Right.
But they play in the SEC, you're going to lose these games. And the fact that there's no other conference in America where a team can go from 3-9 and the next year play in the national championship game and have a lead with a minute to go.
Yeah.
There's no other conference in the world that could do that. Nobody could make that kind of turnaround. But that just shows you that, really, they were 3-9, and they were still close.
Yeah.
Close enough where they could, you know, it's not like they just added a whole new team and everybody was gone. You know what I mean? That, to me, that ends the argument. Because
right.
No other conference could have a team have a turnaround like that.
Yeah.
They're 3-9. You put them in any other conference last year, and they win 8 games.
Yeah, our buddy Tim from the Law, who's an Auburn grad, pointed out when I posted my picks for Coach of the Year that this is a team that comes into fall camp this past year, Auburn, with a true freshman, a kid who's a redshirt freshman that really nobody figures is going to play much at all, and then a converted defensive back.
The D-back who was playing JUCO recently.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean,
he played DB at Georgia.
Yeah.
Went to JUCO, ends up at Auburn, tells Coach Malzahn, like, I'll take snaps. What do you want? And they go to the national championship game in the most difficult conference in the country.
It doesn't happen.
And I'd be stunned. Like, if something like that happened in Oregon, which won pretty much the same kind of system that Auburn does, you'd be like, that's utterly amazing.
Yeah.
That would ever happen. But, yeah, I mean, I heard Stinchcomb the other day, the former lineman there, saying on ESPN, like, finally there were some good BCS games.
Yeah.
For years we've seen some stinkers. I mean, you get those,
UConn.
But you get like an Oklahoma Boise State game, which is phenomenal. That's
Yeah.
But so many stunk.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
the
no,
issues,
right.
They were all really interesting to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just because I'm a crackhead
no,
football fan, but they were great.
Well, that's why, Neil, I'm curious because you're kind of in between Dan and I. Dan obviously is super passionate about college football. I am not. I admit that I don't really get into it for the bowl games. And the only reason I really watch it is to try to find out, like, guys that I'd like to get to draft. And you're kind of in the middle of the road where you do like college football. So what did you make bowl season? What did you make of the national championship game? I mean, couldn't ask for a better bowl season. Even the Go Daddy Bowl was ridiculously entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of regret not watching the coaches' film room. I heard that there was something to behold. Apparently the coaches that were – for anyone who's not familiar, ESPN had ran this kind of new feature to the game where, you know, coaches could gather and watch the game and you could hear the commentary and as if they're in a film room, and they actually called the fake punt that Florida State had when they were down big. And I think that's – I regret not turning into that because I think that's going to be an amazing feature moving forward. But that said – you know, I didn't get to – I didn't watch a lot of Florida State this year, and I was not impressed with Jameis Winston for the first half. But I kept forgetting that the kid's a freshman, you know, and I wasn't used to his expressions. You know, he would look at the sideline, and it wasn't like he was intense or – it didn't look like he was focused. He looked like he was just kind of bewildered and lost. So I think Auburn did a great job of confusing him in the first half. And then, you know, momentum shifted. And, you know, from my perspective, I also didn't watch a ton of Auburn this year. I'm kind of a weirdo, and then I watch, you know, I try to watch Rutgers because I feel like I owe them something. I don't know why. But, you know, to me, it seems odd that Auburn relies so heavily on what looks to be the same play. And maybe that's why it's so successful, where they're in the shotgun. I believe they have either Mason or one of the running backs that motion towards Marshall. He then either gives to the running back or fakes and takes it himself. And I'm sitting there thinking, how is this offense so potent against a defense that was so staunch during the regular season? I mean, they were beating teams by buttloads of points during the regular season. So I was pulling for Auburn personally because I felt like they just seemed to have that magical season. You know what it is? It's where the ball bounces their way. And, I keep relating back to the Giants, but during their Super Bowl runs, they just had plays that kind of went their way, whether it was the JPP blocked field goal in Dallas or what have you. You know, Auburn had two humongous, miraculous plays. And so I felt like they carried that into the game. And I thought that even if FSU did come back, that Auburn had an answer. I don't know what it was, but they were going to pull out something crazy. And it's weird because a couple of sites today, I don't know if it was today or this week, were pointing to the kickoff return after Jameis Winston throws that touchdown, which I'll go back to that in a second. But Auburn had a seam down that left sideline. If you look at it from the end zone perspective, where they throw back to the other dude on the other side, I think it was Mason, or maybe it was Chris Davis, and they had a wall set up. And if he sticks down that sideline and makes maybe a move upfield a little bit more, he might take that to the house. So they almost had another miracle up their sleeve, but not to take everyone hostage, but to me, I don't know that Winston really proved that he was a Heisman winner. You know, I know a lot of people are saying this is one of the greatest BCS games, one of the best national title games in the history. It was entertaining, no doubt. I didn't really get the sense that Winston was a Heisman winner on that winning drive or throughout that game. Was he able to bounce back? Yeah, sure. But completely collapsed on that last drive. I mean, that wasn't Winston. That was Auburn's D just completely looking like Swiss cheese up in that piece. And then, you know, the fact that he's able to loft to a 6'5 receiver, Benjamin, in the end zone, I mean, that's not a tough throw to make in my estimation. You know, I would put Vince Young's run, you know, where he had to run for the touchdown against USC, I'd put that above Jameis Winston's loft. So, but that said, I'm more in love with Red Lightning. I need to get your thoughts on Red Lightning.
Red Lightning, you were all over Red Lightning, all over the thing. This is the guy, this is the little sideline dude?
Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. I mean, I was hoping that someone would notice him because I was sitting there and my new lady friend was leaving the room and he comes on the TV screen and I was like, you got to get him here. Get in here right now. You got to see this guy's hair, his beard, his look, his glasses. And then to find out that the guy sprints with the players to the end zone. I mean, if you're a ball boy in the NCAA, you got to step up your game because Red Lightning's taking it over.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I didn't notice him, but I saw you posting about him, so I started following the little Red Lightning. Yeah, he was entertaining. I'll tell you this about James, just to go back to Jameis Winston again. You know, when you watch the game, you know he was horrible in the first half, and he didn't want to say it was. He said it was all on him. It had nothing to do with Auburn scheme, which I don't agree with. But then you look at the final drive, and everybody keeps pointing. He was 6 of 7. Really, I mean, it was a 50-yard play that
yeah.
won the game, and that was because, like you said, Neil, I mean, two Auburn defensive backs just ran into each other, and he broke it down the sideline, and they missed the horse collar call, which is blatant, like right away. But then, you know, to me, and you could say maybe it wasn't his fault, but had they not gotten that pass interference call, we'd be talking about is that delay of game penalty
right.
that happened at the end of the game. And at the end of the day, anybody that's played quarterback knows that's on you.
Yeah.
That's on you.
In the first half, you know, I'm sure if you went back and looked at the film, I mean, he didn't have a whole lot of time in that first half.
You don't have a lot of time in the NFL either.
No,
I
understand that.
I mean,
but, you know, he had Ford on him, Dee Ford on him. He's a great defensive end. He had him on his tail for 30 minutes in the first half. I mean, everywhere he went. And watching the game, I mean, as bad as you can feel for Heisman Trophy winner, it's how I felt for him. I'm like, you know what? They look like they're about to get buried. And if they lose, a lot of people aren't bright enough to look at it and go, he didn't have any time.
Yeah.
I mean, we talk about it with a guy like Eli Manning, and then it's applicable to him, but yet here you are in a college game, and this is the level he plays at. He's not Eli Manning. It's the level he plays at. He had no time. Whatever.
He's never been asked to do that all
absolutely
year.
Absolutely not. And, I mean, the BC game where he tried to liken it to them being down 17-3 or 20-3 to BC, BC is one of the worst teams you'll see, and I'm embarrassed I picked them against Arizona. I mean, I knew, you know, but whatever. The adjustments made, I thought, what was really impressive was Jimbo Fisher, not just because I picked him the coach of the year, which ended up giving to Mal Brown, but the adjustments they made at halftime. I mean, they picked up whatever it was Auburn was doing, whether it was four-man rush or they were blitzing linebackers or whatever. He had some time in the second half, and you saw the talent that they had. Getting the ball to Green, getting the ball to Shaw, getting the ball to Benjamin. I mean, the running back, Freeman, was great.
Yeah.
He had time. The guy started blocking better. To me, that was the change. It was just whatever Fisher and his staff did at halftime.
Yeah.
And defensively, Pruitt is a great defensive coordinator. They patched up whatever the hell holes they had.
Yeah, in that third quarter, they shut
it
down.
It was extremely impressive. To shut down Trey Mason for a drive is impressive. To do it over an extended period of time and a half.
Yeah, I mean, it was all
I'm not taking credit from the players.
Yeah.
The coaches deserve a lot of credit because they fixed whatever friggin' holes they had. In the second half, they played great. I mean, you know, a lot of different calls that could have gone one way or the other. But here we are, you know. And I'm going to tell you one last thing. I don't sell out Steve Spurrier next year. I think people, and I've said it, that he's not like this national championship coach. I mean, we're talking about the SEC, so I just want to stay there. Youngest team in the country, number three recruiting class, I think, coming in, loaded with skilled players, landed, I think, three of the top 14 offensive linemen or whatever he did. That's an 11-win team with a Hall of Fame coach. It's going to be interesting next year because I think for the first time, Saban has real, real pressure with – you see how good Auburn is, they're young. Georgia was riddled with injuries. They've got a good young quarterback. They've got some good young pieces. South Carolina – and, of course, LSU right there in their own division, and you're just going to see what A&M does. It's going to be really interesting.
And I'll tell you what, I mean, A.J. McCarron is like the most underappreciated college quarterback that I could ever remember. And you're going to see now how much of that's wrong. I mean, everybody likes to say, well, he's just a product of this great team. That's somebody that's never played quarterback. I don't care at any level. Because you can't – this idea that it's just really easy to not make mistakes. It's, you know, as Geno Smith, he was asked not to make mistakes. As Mark Sanchez, just don't make mistakes. Playing quarterback at a level like that, it doesn't happen. And, you know, it's a shame how, you know, his career ended there with that loss. But we'll see. Whoever they have, I'm sure they have some guy who redshirted and was great.
Well, they got the number one kid last year. They went to Utah.
Yeah.
To get the number one kid who redshirted.
There's a million guys who were great, high school players. We'll see if they're able to do that. Two things, just to put a bow on the college football season.
Yeah.
I'm a guy who, and I've said it many times on the show, I hate phony outrage. And there's two stories from the last several days, and I'd like to get both of your opinions on it, that I find were just completely phony outrage. I'll start with the smaller of the two, and that was in the GoDaddy Bowl. They ran Arkansas State ran a trick play, and the commentator called the play what it was. It was called the hide the midget play. The guy was like down on a knee, and immediately there was all this. It must have even gotten back to the announcers because by the end, by the next time they mentioned, they called it hide the little person play. Now, if you're honestly, I'm a guy. I don't believe in belittling anybody, but that's the name of the play.
Yeah.
The idea that they're mad at this announcer for saying it, the idea that he even knew the name of the play on the spot, we did play-by-play. It happened so fast. He said the play. He didn't do it, offensively. Whether the name of the play is offensive is one thing. The idea that in that moment he was able to even remember what that play was and say it, and there's this outrage from whatever group there is, and I believe it's phony because I honestly believe that little people around America are not like, we're watching that game like, oh, my God, turn the TV off. But there has to be some PC police that make it. And then this guy had, the idea that these announcers, and they were awful. It was Danny Canal and somebody else, I think, doing that game. They were not good. But the idea that they're coming under some fire for in the heat of the moment, saying what it was. It wasn't some slip-up. The name of the play. It was, whatever it is. It's a gimmick play. Did you find any offense to that?
No. And you know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say this. Leave football and hockey and things like that to men. And when I say men, I mean women too, but I mean tough people.
Yeah.
If you're offended by that.
Yeah, it was not like they're just making fun of little people.
You should get beaten up by a little person.
It's, to me, stuff
that.
Like that, and it'll lead me to my next outrage in moment, and I think you kind of know what I'm leading towards. And that's this guy, Red McComb, the big booster from Texas, who came out bashing the hire for the Louisville coach.
He's on the Vikings.
Yeah, he's on the Vikings, Spurs, he's on a bunch of teams. Donated $100 million as a booster, and he came out just bashing the hire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy came off like an idiot. He looked like a boob. I mean, more so because I thought the guy just looked like he thought Texas football was so big. He said he could close his eyes and say, eeny, meeny, miny, moe, anybody would come, which isn't factually accurate because they went after a lot of people. They went after Saban, Gruden, all these guys, and they didn't want the job. He just thought that they could get whoever they wanted to. To me, that was the story, because these guys are so unbelievably cocky down in Texas, like the Texas mentality, that they just like, oh, we get whoever we want. But the spin on it is that was a racist comment. Now, I am, never trying to belittle racism because I'm not somebody that's, a denier of it. It clearly exists. I see it all the time in my personal life. I see it all the time. But when you are crying wolf about something like this, it belittles actual racism.
Yeah.
Because he was not doing it to be racist. He was doing it because he's a dumb Texas booster who thinks of himself as this, he's like Donald Trump who just thinks like he could control the world.
Yeah.
And that's what this guy was. I mean, and immediately when I read it, I'm like, people are going to interpret this as racism.
Yeah, right.
To me, it actually diminishes real racism because when you keep crying wolf on things that aren't real racism, when something happens, it falls on deaf ears.
Yeah.
So I have phony outrage on both of those accounts.
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't know if I'm going out of bounds here. I mean, when I made my list, I had Texas prospective coach. I had David Shaw, Stanford coach.
Yeah, I remember,
guy second on my list. And I have to say, I thought when Mora, I think Mora was the last one, they passed on them to stay at UCLA, and then they went to Charlie Strong. I was surprised because he is an African-American coach, and that was surprising to me.
He jumped in this. To go, in Texas.
You know what I mean?
From Louisville there. That's a huge
thing. And to go from Matt Brown, who's kind of like a good old boy, and I mean that as a compliment to him, to do that. But, I mean, you look at a guy like Kevin Sumlin, one of the best coaches in the country. He's done a phenomenal job at A&M. And for a long time, that was considered even more of a good old boy type school than he'd be. A guy like McCombs, I mean, he probably just says things like he ran the Vikings, which is like an idiot. He's just an idiot. I mean, he ran the Vikings.
But
like
you read that thinking that he was saying it because he's a black guy? or did you read it as he was a guy, like, we're Texas. We're not taking somebody from Louisville. I didn't think he looked down on him. I think if it was Mike Tomlin, he would have been like, that's great hire.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what I'm putting in another outstanding, like, high profile. In his mind, it's all about the name. It's the name. It's the name, which is stupid.
Yeah.
And we talked about it when the Nick Saban thing. I'm like, this can't be real. Why is Texas this, like, coveted place to go coach where you would leave Alabama and the dynasty that you put together there, and the legacy you put together there, to go to play just because what? Because the name Texas and because there's money there? There's money in Alabama.
Yeah. I mean, guys like this, and it's a different discussion.
Of course the guy's name is Red McCoon.
Absolutely. But
I mean,
stuff like this is a different discussion for a different day, but I'll say this. Like, for years, Auburn has had this, like, unknown booster, I guess. But they say he basically just does what he wants. The billionaire does what he wants. T. Boone Pickens has done that for millennia at Oklahoma State. So to hear this story, I mean, the NCAA, and that's what I'm saying, it's a different discussion, but they should do something to crack down on these guys having this kind of influence. But in terms of what he said, I didn't even interpret.
It was a blowhard. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Anybody that donates $100 million and thinks they can get the control thing
are
weird. I got Johns Hopkins. Our biggest booster was Michael Bloomberg. We had a building that was next. Bloomberg. But the idea that he would come in and be like, well, the cross coach at Johns Hopkins needs to be, you know, one of the Gates brothers or something like that would be insane. I mean, Neil, either one of those stories. Am I out of bounds here, or are they both just phony outrage?
Yeah, well, people get bored, and when they get bored, they want to, you know, they want to stir the pot. So, I mean, you know, I didn't have a problem with the hide the midget play. I know that midget's considered a bad word, but you know, I've heard stand up comedy from a midget comedian who pokes fun at it. So, I think it's you're totally right. You're right to call him out, and you know, I think that with Red in his comments, I mean. You know, if you're a fan, like if you're, it's the definition of being a fan, of being a fanatic. You know, I'm a Giants fan, I'm a Mets fan, and so when it comes to my teams, I tend to go a little over the top. So, I mean, I don't want to cut the guy any slack because it was pretty drastic, but you know, we get heated when it comes to something we're passionate about. So, you know, I tend to express my outrage at select moments, and sometimes they're just really weird moments, but, yeah, no, I'm with you. Totally weird, totally phony, and, but that's how people go sometimes. They just, it hits a button, hits a chord, and they gotta speak out.
Exactly. It's phoniness. I don't think it was rooted in racism, what he said. The guy, his name sounds like Scrooge McDuck. And that's what he is. And so, you know, none of that bothers me. And I'm a guy who does get bothered by real racism and real, like, discrimination against people with disabilities. Neither of those. The idea is, I mean, should the play not be called that? Of course not. Should it, in hindsight, if they knew this play was coming, should they have said it? But in the heat of the moment, to get mad at the announcers for saying what the play's name was, you know, it's just unrealistic. Like, you shouldn't always be just so worried to say anything. And I even think about that even here. And we have a small audience, but, like, am I ever going to slip up and say something stupid?
I know.
It's like, you don't want – I just don't like that, like, PC police is always, like, looking over you. It's phoniness. It's by a small group of people that are you know, going to be calling for somebody's head because, you know, they slipped up. And in the case of Red McCombs, it's just an old who just thinks that everyone – well, you know, he could bring Bill Parcells back out of retirement to go coach at UT.
Right. Like, I typically want to know in these kind of circumstances, where is it coming from? What's it based in or on or whatever? It's a football game. You know what I mean? This isn't some politician running for office who says the word midget to describe people that are tiny or whatever.
Yeah, right.
It's a football game. It's a team's playbook.
Nobody's watching the GoDaddy.
No, if I opened
Arkansas State.
Right. If I opened up a playbook, if I opened up Alabama's playbook and saw that one of their front covers was like high in the guinea, I mean, come on.
But that's what I always think. Like, what's
my business?
Like, what's the most offensive thing for an Italian? Tell you what.
Right.
Something like that. Would I ever be like, I got to write a letter?
No.
Because somebody accidentally said it. Especially accidentally said it. You know, I would never write a letter anyway. But if it was like somebody was like, like a prepared statement, and they were like, these, you know, WAPs or whatever, then it's like, well, this guy's just an idiot.
I wrote one letter one time, and if you know what it was because of, seriously, they took the lemon Tootsie Roll Pops lollipop thing They took the lemon ones out. I wrote to the company, and they got back to me and sent me a bag full of lemon lollipops.
You mean a little, like, dum-dum?
No, the ones with the chocolate in the middle. What do you call them?
Tootsie Pops.
Tootsie Pops.
Yeah, I didn't know there was lemon ones.
There was lemon ones. I was maybe in my early 20s. They sent me an entire bag.
You're like an elementary.
No, they sent me an entire bag. I wrote
handwritten or you type it out?
So I typed it out. Nice. And they sent it back to me going, we're discontinuing this product, but this is in good good faith or whatever. Here you go.
They gave you some?
They sent me a bag of them. That's the only one I've ever written. Why did you? It was like one line. Why did you give me the lemon?
You have that saved on your computer. We could post that on our site.
I suggest.
I mean, God.
It's so worth it. It's literally one or two lines. Like, please explain to me why you took the yellow.
It's in Word 97.
I love them. I hate them all the time. You used to get the bag and you get like one.
How did you even know they were just, you just went to every like Dwayne Reed and
the I might have been a deal where I didn't see him for a while.
Something was up.
I think it was two in a bag of like 30 pops. And I would immediately open up the bag and take both lemon ones out. So that's the one. That's how much you got to upset me. You got to mess with my lollipop.
Yeah,
that's good. I got more problems.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll get some NFL talk with the Tri-State Sports guys. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Shy Rosalyn, and I'm inviting you to visit my new shop, Pond's Edge Designs by Rosalyn Brunson. My motto is fun, funky, and affordable. Wearable art for men, women, and even home decor items. All handmade in the USA, every item one of a kind. Don't be shy, stop by. PondsEdgeDesigns.net.
All right, we're back, Neil. Can we get to some NFL talk? We talked enough about the Giants. I'm not going to even talk about the Jets. I talked enough about the fact that I was at that game. So we're going to get to this weekend's playoff games, which are just fantastic. We've got about 45 minutes left in the show. If you do want to call in, the number, as always, 347-637-2306. You can always find us on TriStateSportsGuys.com, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys, or on Twitter at @TriState_sports. I mean, Neil, this week's game, you gave your pick just winner or loser, and I think that was difficult enough when it came down to especially week one games, but I don't think it gets that much easier this weekend. Biggest surprise of the weekend, biggest surprise outcome. I mean, everybody's going to point to Cincinnati. I was not a huge believer in Cincinnati, although I did take them. What was your biggest surprise game of the weekend?
Oh, boy, that's tough. I mean, wow. I mean, the Saints showed me a lot. You know, I'd picked the Eagles in that game to win outright, and you know they did have their shot down the stretch there. I was disappointed in the Bengals. I think they came out fairly well with a good game plan. Looked like they were running the ball well, and then they just self-destructed. I mean, and that's not to take anything away from the Chargers because their defense did play really well, and it wasn't like it wasn't exactly gift wrapped and handed to the Chargers D. They did make some really great plays. I wasn't really surprised by San Francisco going into Green Bay and winning despite the weather. I wasn't surprised by Kaepernick going sleeveless because he's just a tough guy. And I say that with a little bit of disdain because I think, I don't know, maybe I'm just a hater, but, I guess I'd have to go with the Bengals and I'd have to go with Andy Dalton. Knowing what he's done in the past, you'd think he would maybe learn from his playoff experiences and come out and play a tighter game than he did. There's only a handful of quarterbacks in the NFL that have made the playoffs their first 3 years in the league, and he's one of them. Joe Flacco is another, and we see where Joe Flacco ended up. So you can't give up on Andy Dalton yet, but I was just surprised that he played so poorly, and he turned the ball over so many times.
Yeah, I mean, the play where he, dove towards the first down marker and fumbled, it's kind of like a freak play. I don't know if you remember, it was a random like regular season game. And I remember seeing Eli Manning do that once during the, I think it was 2007 season. You remember that? I think it was during that time everybody was talking about he was skittish and all. Everybody was down on him, and he was trying to make a play. I mean, that's like one of the – you know, I equate that almost to like the Tony Romo fumbling the, you know, the hold on a field goal. And you're like, oh, see, you can't handle the pressure. Like, that has nothing to do with anything. It has nothing to do with his quarterback skills. There's no way, like, you ever practice diving for a first down and holding onto the ball. It's a weird thing. You should hold on to the ball. But if you don't do it often, you know, you could fumble. It's happened to everybody. And I just find it funny now that, like, I mean, it's a legitimate discussion on ESPN and ESPN Radio and the rest. Like, where do the Bengals go at quarterback now? I mean, I think it's valid that you bring in an experienced veteran like a Fitzpatrick or, dare I say, a Mark Sanchez or somebody to be there. But Danny Dalton's your quarterback on opening day. I mean, I don't think there's a question about that. I mean, you know, he's 3 years into the league. He's had bad games, but since when or now? I mean, the guy's gone, like you said, been in the playoffs 3 times. He's won games for them, clearly, in the past. It's not like it's always been just a system guy and they've got this great defense, and they do have a good defense, but he won games this year with his arm. And so the idea that now, like, oh, they got to start looking, like, where are you going to go to find a guy better than Andy Dalton? There might be 12 or 15 guys better than him, but none of those guys are available. You know, he's in the middle of the pack. That's all you can ask for, Danny. When, as a guy, like you said, you don't watch a ton of NFL. You watched it this weekend. You watched Andy Dalton.
Yeah.
I mean, did you look at this guy like, oh, my God, he could never win?
What struck me there was I think it was more who they lost to and the way the Chargers got in the playoffs. Because, like, let's say the Ravens got with all their, you know, pedigree from last year, and they went into Cincinnati and won. People would be like, yeah, Dalton struggled. But
yeah.
I think people are like, the Chargers stink. So, like, well, they just outplayed them.
Yeah, but the thing, we talked about the Chargers. We did our article.
Absolutely.
Middle of the season, like, what are one of these, like, I think at the time they were all 16, like, which one of these teams can win a playoff game? And we both had the Chargers relatively high because they are that team. They lost some games they should have definitely won. I mean, I think they lost to the Raiders early on in the season. They lost to some games. They lost some games early on. They lost to the Texans week one, if you remember, after a big blowing a big lead. But they are a team when you have a guy like Phillip Rivers, who I do think is a top 10 quarterback. They always have a chance. That's why this game didn't shock me. I mean, I picked the Bengals, but it didn't shock me at all because they are one of those teams where you have a quarterback like that, he can win games. You know what I mean? And I mean, I'm not overly shocked by it. And they want to say, like, oh, it's because they, you know, they lost to the Chargers and they did back their way into the playoffs. Although they had the win, it was crazy, the crazy missed field goal, and everybody else lost, and they didn't play any starters, and they played, you know, the Chiefs didn't play any starters, and they played like crap and all the rest. But, you know, the Chargers are not something to laugh at. And I don't think that the Broncos this weekend should just, like, think that they're going to walk all over the Chargers.
No, I mean, I got to be honest. I was not stunned as I watched that Cincinnati-San Diego. The only game to me that was honestly stunning was the KC-Indy game because of how that all transpired. But I'll be totally dead serious. I don't know a lot about a lot, but I wasn't even surprised the Saints. I really wasn't because –
Yeah, no, I picked the Saints.
Yeah, I mean, Breeze to me is just phenomenal. The Eagles, I don't know how many people had the Eagles winning the Super Bowl or anything like that. So the weather, it was cold. It was, you know, it's tough. Okay, fine. But they made it sound like Breeze was going to go out there and play like I would. He's going to show up and play like the worst.
Drew Brees is, I would say, arguably a top 10 quarterback of all time.
Yeah, I mean,
you look at statistically, nobody throws for yards like the guy or at a completion things like that guy. I mean, he is like, as much as I love Chad Pennington, he is Chad Pennington with an arm and like everything that Chad Pennington did managing the game, except that he's that much better of a quarterback. He's an amazing quarterback.
They're going to Seattle.
Yeah, and that spread right now is sitting at 8.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying it now. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle buried him, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Saints won by 10.
I'd be more surprised if they buried him.
Yeah, I mean, just won. Arizona won there?
Yeah.
Right? They went in there and won? To me, like, you guys know a lot more than I do, but the Saints still make me sick from when they beat the Vikings. Like, that game still irritates me, and I just know, having watched them the last 2 years, how, like, disgustingly good they can be at times. And they played a solid game against Philly. I mean, that was a tough game to win.
Yeah. The big thing about that game was, you know, Rob Ryan, it's kind of been like a laughing stock. Like, they think, like, he just is riding his Ryan left name. But he's never coached in a playoff game before. You know, he's a defensive coordinator for the Browns, and he came over to Dallas, and he got fired from Dallas, and clearly that was a mistake. And then he's going. They put together a fantastic defensive season.
I saw that breakdown the other night.
What is that?
From their defense last year. Like,
kind of,
yeah,
because, I mean, they held Nick Foles to under 200 yards.
Fifth or something.
Yeah, I mean,
total defense from their dead last
fantastic.
Year.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
and he's one of those guys that, like, kind of just gets, he's a joke-looking guy. Looks like a dude.
He got a haircut. I'm being dead serious. If you got a haircut, he'd be more believable.
Yeah, if he had glasses,
looks like such a clown.
He looks like such a joke. And the fact that, I mean, it's not his fault that he coached with the Browns or the Cowboys. You know what I'm saying?
Would you take a job coaching the Browns tomorrow? If you could work out of your house, would you take a job with Cleveland?
No, I wouldn't leave my benefits. I'd rather work construction right now because I got good Benny. You know what I mean?
Right.
We got strong union benefits. You know what's interesting about this weekend, Neil? So the four games, the game that everybody talks about it is the toss-up, and it's a two-point spread, is the Carolina-San Fran game. But the other three games are all touchdown or more spreads, and none of the underdogs would actually shock me. I mean, we just talked about New Orleans going to Seattle. I know New Orleans has not been great on the road, and Seattle is unbelievable at home. But it wouldn't absolutely shock me. Based on what I've seen of the Saints talent-wise, they could play with them. The other two games, I mean – look, the Patriots are laying 7.5 points to the Colts, and I'm not a big Colts guy. But to me, the Patriots have been smoke and mirrors all year, and they've lost some bad games. They lost to the Dolphins, if you remember earlier on, a couple weeks ago. They've lost some bad games. Also the Jets. I mean, this team, you know, they win some games, but they won that crazy game against Denver. But, you know, they don't, talent-wise, the Colts have more talent other than at quarterback, but they have a great quarterback, too. And so that wouldn't shock me for Indianapolis to go up to New England and win that game. And then the final game, you know, you got San Diego. We just talked about them. Now, look, Denver should bury them. But San Diego's already beat them once. They're playing with house money. They shouldn't even be in the playoffs. I could definitely see them putting up 35 points easily against that defense.
Well, to me, Phillip Rivers has that, like, southern puck boy feel. That I don't know how bothered he'll be if it's, you know, 50 below zero in Denver and snowing. Like, I don't think – I think he's from North Carolina. He looks like he'd just be out in the woods hunting deer, like, 3 in the
morning.
Yeah,
just some camo.
25
here.
Below.
I feel like he's like a half-squatch hunter in the office.
Yeah,
he's out there squatching.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what? I think you always make fun of me off the air because you think I'm a little overly confident, possibly.
A little bit.
A little bit overly confident. I get that sense out of Phillip Rivers. I mean, Phillip Rivers' mind, if you were to ask him,
Joe Montana.
It's just like, give me like a blank ballot, like who's the best quarterback of all time. He will write in Phillip Rivers in all caps and just submit it, God's honest truth, put him on. And he's like a very religious guy. He'll just tell you, I'm the best quarterback that's ever walked the earth. And that's what I like about him.
I got a buddy of mine who's a diehard NFL fan, welcome. And he made an interesting little insight last weekend to a guy like me who knows doesn't follow it that closely, but he said, with San Fran going to Green Bay, he goes, okay, they're from the Bay Area, going to Lambeau, fine. They're more built, he says, to be a cold-weather team than the Packers are. And I was like, that's a good point. And when I look at a guy like Rivers, I know it's not talking about the whole team, but I know Keenan Allen, when he was in college at Cal, and I didn't want Adrian Peterson to be drafted by the Vikings, so I am wrong a lot. I thought Keenan Allen would be a great throw. I didn't know he'd be this good this fast.
Yeah.
To me, Rivers looks like a guy like, care what you're doing at Mile High Stadium. And it's funny because they lose games they shouldn't.
All the time.
But you look at this and go, he's coming in there, like you said, house money. He looks like a riverboat gambler. Doesn't give a damn.
That,
anybody,
like, cocky,
yeah,
like,
don't care.
Jerk smiling.
He's like you, but really talented.
But good at sports.
Yeah, he's just a really, really good quarterback. So would I be stunned? No. And I think, truthfully, our buddy Billy will be happy. I think the Niners buried.
Is that right? Even though the Panthers contain Kaepernick and all that.
I mean,
Neil, out of those three big underdogs, which one do you think is the lock? Like, which of those big favorites is a lock? Like, you could just, if you want to just make some easy money, put some safe money on a money line on this game. What's that game?
I mean, I don't see how you have any confidence in Drew Brees and the Saints going into Seattle and even competing in that stadium against that team. There is not a shot in hell. And I know there's a town called hell, and I know it just froze over, but that doesn't mean you got to lose your mind, Santa. I'm telling you, the Seahawks are going to run wild on the Saints. It's not even – why even play the game at this point?
Is he as confident as he was with his Maryland pick getting 15 from Seminole?
Yeah.
Is it that kind of confidence, Neil? Like, you're getting 15 from FSU in College Park?
The turf?
Yeah, you lose 63 zip.
I play with Monopoly money when it comes to the NCAA. I play with real greenbacks when it comes to the pros. So you can count on that. The Seahawks nail it down.
Play with those new beaners with the little stripe on now.
What's the final score? I want to know from Neil.
Yeah, I mean, Danny picked the Missouri score on the button. Give us a score, Neil.
Seahawks Saints. I'm gonna say it's a repeat of the. You know what? I don't want to go that bold. That's a little too bold. I was gonna say the Saints are gonna get shut out, but it's not. I came to my senses. I'm gonna go Seahawks 41, Saints. I'll give them 10. I'll give them 10.
41. They're gonna go 41. I love it. I love the little internal dialogue you just had on the air just now. No. Like somebody was talking to you in your ear. You sound like Gollum. Lord of the Rings,
yeah,
somebody was talking to you. No, Neil, don't say that. Like, what were you going to say? 70 to nothing? Like, what were you going to say? That you paired it back to 41-10.
I was gonna go with 34-0, but I thought, the Saints will probably come out strong, and then it'll just go all downhill from there.
All right, you know what we do, Ab? Can we go to a quick caller, Neil? And maybe this guy just wants to talk about your interview with Harry Carson. I don't know. We're going to go to our producer extraordinaire booking agent, Maddie from Norwalk.
Dave.
Matthew, you're on with the Tri-State Sports Guys, brother. How you doing, pal?
Good. Good job, guys. Congratulations. Great interview. Great show, as always.
All right. Well, what do you got for us, dude?
Just a couple small things. Neil, with the Saints going in on the road, when they went to the Super Bowl, they beat Minnesota in Minnesota in the Dome.
In the Dome.
Let's let the Minnesota Vikings fan. Hold on, Maddie.
I know that's gonna rejuvenate some tension between me and Santa, but I just wanted to say that.
Not at all. But it was in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome. That might have been a different outcome if it was at Mall of America Field. And they had a different referee crew that had eyesight.
Oh, boy.
But my point is, and I think it was the year before, didn't the Saints go beat the Bears at Soldier Field as well? So I guess my point in saying is that when you're saying it's a lock that they're not going to do well in Seattle, well, history kind of disproves that a little bit, right? I mean, in other words, I don't think that Drew Brees is really rattled by another, not having a home field advantage. But that's just the first thing I'm going to say. The Harry Carson interview, it was great. It was absolutely good. It was. I think that you're going to be able to get. We were able to get a lot of information, a lot of insight. But the one thing that I thought that was really interesting, a lot of the points that Harry Carson has said, is something that has been sort of repeated in Neil's articles throughout the season. And when Harry Carson said that, hey, I'm just a fan. I look at this as a fan. You could really tell that he comes off as a fan.
You can tell he's a former player because he still holds that player mentality. You know, I'm trying to get him to talk about next year's schedule and the opponents and how tough they're going to be.
Yeah.
It's a tough schedule. And he's like, throw that out the window because as a player, as an NFL player, you look across the field and you see a bunch of guys that are your size, that are your speed, and that are here for a reason and getting paid money just like you are. So you can't look at the other side of the field as greater or lesser. You got to look at them as your equals, and you got to look at them as if, worthy adversaries, and that you just think you can beat anyone. You got to have that mentality. Otherwise, what are you doing in the NFL?
Yes, exactly. And one final thing before I leave, and Mike and Dan, I want you guys to publicly thank the people that contributed to the most compelling stories of 2013. I think we all can agree all those articles were written. They were interesting. We got a lot of positive feedback on it. And, it's just for the people that during probably arguably one of the more busier times of the year that go and take time out of their day and contribute something for us, we can really say we really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely, Maddie. The guys that put the time in to write those articles were fantastic, and every one of them was fantastic in the fact that they were a unique perspective on those particular events. You've heard a million stories about Mariano Rivera, but I still, to this day, you could Google, like, how did Mariano get his song? I think that's the only article written from the guy who actually picked it, and so to get him to do that, Maddie, and it's a testament to you to track these guys down and do that. To get an article from a woman who ran in the marathon and whose husband was waiting at the finish line, fantastic. And,
Hazel Sweeney.
Hazel Sweeney. I mean,
tremendous.
It was very good. So, you know, all of the articles were fantastic.
Mr. Zulo.
Paul from Brantford talked about some Boston. We're very Boston-centric here at Tri-State Sports Guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're all great. And you're exactly right, man. I mean, everybody thinks, like, you know, we write these articles, and you're like, oh, we'll just whip them together and throw them up. But they take time, and you got to think about them. And, you know, when's the last time you wrote an article or anything, wrote any kind of paper? The last paper Danny wrote before he joined the show was looking for lemon yellow lollipop.
That was right.
That's
yeah.
the last time you sat down at your computer and opened a Word doc.
Well, I mean, one thing I love about Santa, and I think he puts himself out there a lot more than a lot of people. And I remember just the couple articles that I wrote. You know, I remember sending them to Mike and being like, hey, you know, you had this pit in my stomach. I'm like, man, do I really want to put myself out there? You know, I mean, when you write an article and it's, you know, I mean, we can get anywhere between, you know, 1,000, 2,000 views throughout the life of this article. And you put yourself out there and you open yourself up to critique, you know, you're opening yourself to ridicule. You know, you like to think, especially with, you know, you go through Twitter, go through Facebook, you know, it's more than just being good at English. It's actually having the balls to go out there and put yourself out there, showing, you know, hey, is my English going to be correct? Am I making my point clear enough? You know, is my opinion, is it going to be rattled? I mean, there is a lot to it. And so for these, you know, these people, of course, like yourselves as well, that go continue to put themselves out there, I just think it's something that should be commended.
Absolutely. And the thing, like you're saying, my always biggest fear is not the fact that, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people are going to see it. It's the fact that maybe there's something in there that is dumb and goes viral for the wrong reason. Because nowadays, you know, God forbid we wind up on like Cost.0 or Deadspin or Barstool. Like, look at these idiots. And all these people that wrote these articles never wrote an article. None of them ever wrote an article. Maybe DJ Zulo did, but wrote an article for a real publication. And write that article to have – there is that trepidation that I'm going to write something and then, you know, you read it a million times and there's something in there that's stupid. And it gets picked up like, look at these idiots.
You know what's interesting about that, though, is we talk about your self-confidence, my insecurities. I've never even thought about that.
Now I've put it in the
– You know why? You know what I do think about when I write it, which is as long as I don't offend, which I know I have nothing intentionally with some different things, but as long as it's not my intention to, like, really, really hurt someone's feelings, then what's the difference? It's just my opinion on something. I write a golf article today. What if I'm wrong about everything? I don't care.
Yeah, right.
You know, you write it then. You know, at one point, Harlan Ellison, great writer, sci-fi writer, said, where were you when the page was blank? So, I mean, at one point, the page is blank, and we put these stories down, me, you, Matt, Neil, Tony, these people that guest wrote for us.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Tony's the one that's got the coyote.
Tony's a good kid.
Tony doesn't care. Tony doesn't write about anything.
Yeah, let's ask Tony about that.
By the way, if you want to apply for the job of producer, you can email us at tri-state-sports.com.
The Santa Green Bay article was a little mean. That was a little put up there.
That was a little touchy,
that little article.
That's my sabermetrics article. But Matt, in a word, how about Josh Harding being left off Team Canada? What about that?
What
are your thoughts on Josh Harding?
My thoughts on him?
I mean, Maddie, you had the balls to write an article about how you got drunk at high school soccer games.
That kind of just fits into my personality. Did you ask me about Josh Harding or no? That article?
Yeah, you did.
That article was just that. I mean, that was. I have to say this, and I don't want this to be the 2014, the year that me and Santa go out and get ginger ales and water together. But I mean that's when I fell in love with Santa. I said that this guy really, really is putting himself above the show. And I thought that article was, you know, regardless if you're a Tri-State Sports Guy fan or you're just somebody that, you know, is just reading this from in Bumble Place, wherever in Nebraska, you read that article and you can't help but to be touched. But a little, you know, there's a lot of little sidebars that, you know, you guys don't know about just because of the fact that, you know, it just don't share it. In other words, you just get the guess. But I went back and forth with the Minnesota Wild, the media relations guy, to have him call into the show. And the one thing that he says that I guess what happens is that there's other people with MS across the country that called him as well to have Josh Harden call him. And finally, I guess somebody in the Wild organization says, look, you know, you still got a job here to do. You know, you're the goalie for us, and we can't have you calling all these people all the time. So he doesn't do any interviews whatsoever about MS during the season. But after the season, that's when he does it. So I thought that was kind of interesting. The second one I'll leave the second one for off the air. I'll tell you when I see it in person, Tim.
Were you trying to get Jen Seltzer on the – because we get hits on Jen Seltzer's yoga pants that Tony wrote about. We get hits on that every single day. That's what we need to get on here is Jen Seltzer. Talk about her yoga technique. And so maybe that day Tony will show up to the show. He'll be here. He'll be at my house at 6 o'clock.
Oh, please. I'm the only single guy here.
I know.
You guys all got to do –
the biggest breaking news of this show is that Neil's got a special lady.
Yeah.
And the poor girl wanted to go freshen up, and brought her back into the room to look at red lightning.
Yeah,
Now he's got a special man that he wants to take down to Myrtle Beach for ginger ales and water.
I know.
Hey, you know, I'm open minded. I'll think it. I'll consider it.
But it's so funny that with Neil on that, because you know I talk to these people.
Party.
No, I talk to these people, you know, and when I talk to them, I'm a huge Harry Carson fan. I mean, I really am. And so, you know, I've been talking to him for the past, you know, 60 days trying to get him to come onto the show. And it's, you know, it's always ahead like a, you know, he'll say, you know what, I'm traveling tonight, blah, blah, blah. And then he'll say something like, well, what do you think about this week, you know? And then I'll sit there and I'll get into this five-minute conversation. I'll hear him say, man, I'm really talking to Harry Carson. So if you're, like, you know, a huge fan, and, you know, as Neil said, it's sort of the formative years of growing up. When you're sitting there and you're talking to these guys, you kind of think that, hey, this is kind of a pretty cool thing, you know? It's like if Don Mattingly called in, I'd be probably the same way, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what I was saying to Neil after the interview. It's like, you know what? We do this podcast. It's good. We have a little niche following, which is cool and all. But at the end of the day, we're just a couple of sports fans who get to talk to, like, legendary guys like, you know, Ernie Banks and Tommy John and Dr. James Andrews. And what has been the most fascinating thing of this whole show to me has been the fact that these guys are genuine guys and take it seriously and will give us an interview like they're talking to Barbara Walters. I love that about them.
Well, the most fascinating thing about the show, let's just keep this thing, you know, in perspective here. This show has been going on for, you know, over 2 years. And I think we all can agree the guests started coming on in August, you know, or late August and September. But, you know, these guests are 20 minutes. You know, they're not the content of the show. And what I'm saying is for 2 years, you know, you guys have been able to talk sports for 2 hours straight with limited, you know, maybe 10, 15-second commercials and make things interesting. And I think that is what the show, you know, really, the leg that the show really stands on. If, you know, the interviews or the celebrity interviews, that's great. You know, I mean, but they're 20 minutes out of, what, you know, 120? So I don't lose fight. You know, we're not, this isn't a show that's just identified by getting a couple, you know, cold callers to call in. This show is identified for just being entertaining sports talk, and, you know, by a couple fans, which, you know, we are.
Yeah, that's what we like to do, sit here. But now it's just me drinking by myself here, which I don't mind. I'm a man's man. I'm a man's man. I'll sit here and have a cocktail by myself. What of it? And so, yeah, we like, you know, we have fun. We talk sports, and it's a good time. We make fun of Neil's dating woes. That's good. Well, Maddie, you know, we can't thank you enough, and we're so happy to have you as part of the team, brother. So not to put any pressure on you, but you got to one-up Harry Carson next week.
The lineup is already set. Next week will be the biggest Tri-State Sports Guy show of all time.
President
Barack
I'm
Obama.
Being dropped.
Yep, I'm not giving the names. It's set up to be the best one.
Wow.
So anyway, all right, we'll talk to you guys soon. Congratulations. Good job. That'd be good.
All right, thank you. That's Matt. That's a great Maddie from Norwalk, our producer, joined the show. I mean, that's what's cool about it. The guy was just like a fan of the show, wanted to help out, started just booking insane guests all the time, and now he's part of the show. So that just shows you what things can happen, you know, if you listen to our show.
Yeah.
And it really, I mean, we could owe everything to Matt.
Yeah. He came across as though the way he heard it, I was fishing for compliments.
All he did was just love Dan Bennett.
Yeah, but all I wanted to know was what he thought about Josh Hart not making a living. But I was being dead serious.
Yeah, he wants to be your friend so bad, and you don't want to be his friend. Why don't we just be friends with Matt Kelly?
I don't make friends.
Right, I mean, Neil, can you? Did you get that sense? I mean, all Matt wants to do is be friends with Dan, and Dan is obviously the coolest guy on the show.
Yeah.
But you're not having it. You got to earn Dan's friendship.
That's right. Over years. It's
a secret love. Dan secretly loves him. He just can't show it in public. He probably goes home and gives him a call, say, "Hey, buddy, you know, great call. Thanks for coming in." But you got to quit it with the love talk. You know,
Did Matt get a Happy New Year text from you?
No,
be honest.
No,
show me your phone.
No one did.
No. All right, Neil, can we finally talk about the Hall of Fame a little bit? I think this is my last
get
time.
Get your pillow, Neil. We can take a little rest.
Listen, Neil, this might be the last time I talk about the Baseball Hall of Fame. I've been ranting about it, about how it's a meaningless entity, this Baseball Hall of Fame at this point. Because if I'm going to tell my kids someday are going to ask about the Baseball Hall of Fame, and they're going to say, "What is the Baseball Hall of Fame?" And you say, "Well, those are the best players that ever played the game."
A joke.
Oh, yeah? What the all-time hit leader, is he in there? No, he's not in there. How about the all-time home run leader? No, he's not in there. What about the best catcher, the best hitting catcher of all time? He's got to be in the Hall of Fame, right? Well, no, he didn't get in a couple times because he had back knee in a picture once. So he can't possibly be in the Hall of Fame. How about Roger Clemens, the guy who had 7 Cy Young Awards? Well, no. He might have done steroids, God forbid. Well, didn't guys cork their bats? Well, didn't Mickey Mantle have a corked bat after he died and they got, you know, clearly, the guy who was a Mickey Mantle bat, game-used bat, that's what it was sold as, and it was corked, and, well, that's fine. What about the spitballers? Oh, they're fine. Well, the guys who did amphetamines, well, they're fine. But what about the guys back in the 20s that you should literally, this happened, like, in the early times of baseball, they would literally not step on second base. They would just cut over because there's only one umpire. That's fine. That's just the history of the game. That's the fabric of the game. That's what makes it great. Guys used to run around the bases backwards back in the day, but that's the history of the game. Oh, my God, you stick a needle in your butt. Whoa. I don't care how good you are. You would never be in the Hall of Fame, Danny.
Do you want to explain to your two lovely daughters when they get older on the day Barry Bonds gets in when she asks you, why is there so much clamor about him getting in, Danny?
Yeah.
I'm like, what did he do? And then you tell her, well, listen, he didn't quite think he was good enough or he was better than the guys that were breaking records like McGuire and Sosa, which he was. So he stuck a needle in his butt to gain a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
So if you fall behind on the basketball team or the field hockey team or you're playing girls ice hockey, why don't you stick a needle in your ass?
No, I would love to have that conversation.
I don't
with my
think
daughter.
You would.
I would love to have that conversation. You know what, look, Daddy was a good baseball player. I decided not to take steroids or anything like that. I know. I shouldn't think that. I was a great baseball player.
Right.
And I didn't stick steroids in my butt. But, you know, that's the decision these guys made. And you know what? He risked his life. It's a stupid decision he made. But I'm going to be able to tell my daughter with look her right in the eyes and say, I've never, ever in my life seen a better hitter in the history of my life than
that's
Barry Bonds. Well, I have never seen myself in life.
Yeah.
I would love, if I were like, you know, you always ask, like, what your superpower would be. My superpower is flying, invisibility. Might be just to be able to watch myself play. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We talked a little bit before we went on air, and I found it laughable today. That's the perfect word. I was laughing at the outcry from people. I was laughing at the phony outrage, as you like to call it. It was apropos. I don't get any of it in terms of Trent Vigil will get in. He'll get in. Jeff Kent will get in.
Yeah, well, that
doesn't bother me. Those guys will get in. I mean, all the other stuff about Levitar giving his vote to Deadspin, the guy who only voted for Jack Morris, that stuff's stupid. It's stupid on an epic level that you call them pencil neck geeks today, and that's what they are.
Yeah.
Take their votes away from them. I know they try to make it transparent now, but I want to know more than I already know. I want to know who voted for them, why. I want explanations.
Well,
I write an essay for them.
That's my thing. All that stuff that you said, I agree with you. None of the, like, individual people that didn't get in, Craig Biggio.
So what's bothering you?
It's the whole thing. The way that people get in the Hall of Fame, this is the Hall of Fame. It's like what everybody, like a little kid,
sure,
when they're 5 years old, you dream, you want to make your varsity team, you want to go to playing college, you want to get drafted, you want to make the major leagues, you want to be an all-star, you want to make the Hall of Fame. The pinnacle of the sport is the Hall of Fame, and it comes down to these idiots who they decide the pinnacle of the game, and they do it with, I'm only going to vote for one guy. I'm going to just give my vote away. I'm going to vote for Armando Benitez to make a statement. I'm going to vote for, Jock Jones.
Right.
And that, to me, it's the process of what we judge players someday. And I think, I had this argument with you about, and it wasn't even an argument, I agreed with you, about sabermetrics. And, like, someday I just want to sit at a bar and talk about, the greatest players I've ever seen. And I'm not going to go talk about some war stat.
Right.
I'm going to talk about, like, what I saw.
Right.
And I think that's what the Hall of Fame has become. Because at the end of the day, when I sit there, when I'm 80 years old and I'm at the American Legion, post 12 in Norwalk, drinking my scotch and water with some old-timer, I'm going to talk about Barry Bonds, whether he's in the Hall of Fame or not.
Right.
So then that's what I mean. The Hall of Fame is now meaningless. It's now meaningless, dude, because it doesn't matter. Because in my mind, I'm thinking of the best players I've ever seen. Roger Clemens, as much of a D-bag as he is, and as much as, like, I know he would have never had this resurgence had he not done it, still put together a career like I've never seen and was one of the most dominant pitchers I've ever seen. And whether he's in the Hall of Fame or not, it's not going to change my opinion on it. It's not going to – same thing with, like, you want to keep Sammy Sosa out, that's fine. Because I agree, that guy was strictly because of steroids and cork bats, and he did everything he could do. But – the reason I say it's meaningless is when I'm having a conversation at a bar when I'm 80 years old, whether the guy's a Hall of Famer or not, to me, makes no difference. Pete Rose is one of the best players of all time. He's not in the Hall of Fame. It doesn't mean anything that he's not in the Hall of Fame. It doesn't mean anything. Because when I'm sitting at a bar having a conversation about sports, it doesn't mean anything.
So if the whole thing doesn't mean anything, then why are you here?
I said this is the last time. Today was like my revelation day. That's why I didn't get angry. I just said, it came to the realization that the Hall of Fame is meaningless. It's a meaningless – why do we even have these arguments? Because you have these arguments because you want to – the reason you go to the Hall of Fame thing is, like, you like to have the debate. Is this guy – is Roy Halladay going to be a Hall of Famer?
Right.
It's a cool debate. It's always a fun debate to have. But when you have guys that are clearly the best players that ever played the game, like Barry Bonds, not in the Hall of Fame, why do we even discuss it? It's meaningless. It's meaningless. You have Barry Bonds on the Hall of Fame. So the debate, if you're getting into what club? Some club of guys that you think fit your mold, even though I guarantee you if steroids were available, Mickey Mantle would have taken them. I can guarantee you those matches.
Bob Gibson said that to Bob Costas when they had a round table with he, Mays, and I think it might have been Hank Aaron, I think. You know, him and McCovey. And Bob Gibson said, if we had him in my day and I saw a guy I knew I was better than, putting up better numbers than me, and I knew he was juicing, I would have done it in a heartbeat. Because I wouldn't have stood for it. It would have affected my wallet. It would have affected all the kinds of leverage I would have had in negotiating with the Cardinals and whatever. I mean, even with the reserve clause, it's like, I would have had no leverage or whatever. To me, just to talk about the sabermetrics thing, that kills baseball because guys like us don't want to sit down. And let's say you think Mickey Mantle is better than Willie Mays, and you're going to argue with me. And then the sabermetrics guy comes in and goes, well, I can tell you who's better.
Yeah,
they think
that's the answer.
And what
the answer to those people is the answer.
Yeah, it invalidates every discussion I've ever had with my dad, my grandfathers, guys that knew more baseball, I would bet you anything, dollars to donuts, than just about any sabermetrician that I could ever find. And it almost tells me, like, well, you and your dad are just a couple of idiots sitting around talking about stuff you don't know anything about because you have a calculator.
Yeah.
That's that argument. In terms of the Hall of Fame, when I've been there, I think I feel something, not to be like hokey about it, but I feel something when I walk in there. It's cool. It's being able to see busts and the big scoreboard there with the all-time leaders. And it is striking to see Pete Rose atop that list. It's striking when you see Joe Jackson, who Babe Ruth said is the greatest hitter that ever lived.
Yeah.
He's not in there. And a buddy of mine had asked me a while back, because I'm such a Pete Rose guy, and I don't even think I'd like the guy if I met him, but he's such a great player. If they put in Rose and they put in Jackson and Seacott and Buck Weaver and all those guys, would you change your tune on steroids? And, yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I absolutely would. So all the anti-steroid stuff I say, that's my little secret in the closet. if you put in Rose, Jackson, and all those great White Sox players, I would change my tune. But as of right now, I don't even have a desire to discuss Barry Bonds or Clemens or any of those guys. I think Piazza's getting a raw deal because he was a big guy, because he was built like a tank and whatever. No, I understand
really
that.
Get anything. It's
but the other
joke.
Thing I always have in my mind is those writers are in and out of those clubhouses every day. I don't know what they know. And I mean that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Did they see things? Did they hear things?
Well,
you hear rumblings all the time. I don't know, so I'm not making a statement. I'm just saying I don't know what those writers know. They have way more access than
they have. You know what they know? Is when my daughter asked me one day, like, what is the Baseball Hall of Fame? I could easily just say it's a club that was created by a bunch of Pennsylvania geeks,
yeah,
never played the game, that decided these guys are the greatest. And the reason you could say that, regardless of the guys you mentioned in the Black Sox, the guy, you know, Pete Rose, the Sarah guys, I mean, Bill Madden, whether you want to say Albert Bell was a Hall of Famer or not,
right,
borderline Madden, a guy that we, yeah, could have a barroom discussion,
yeah,
about. In a perfect world, we,
right,
could. The day he announced retirement because he had that degenerative hip or whatever he had something where he couldn't play. He's only 33.
Yep.
He wrote an article where he said, I don't feel bad for this guy. He was a jerk. He was a surly guy. And when it becomes time to get in the Hall of Fame, he's going to rue the day that he treated us like this.
Yeah.
Now, if Ty Cobb played in the 1980s and 90s, they would have said the same thing about him.
Right.
Because he was the biggest jerk that ever probably lived in America, let alone, you know, he was like a gangster, a,
yeah,
guy. So that just shows you, these guys, they think they have this power over these. All they do is like, let me watch these guys because they want to be these guys.
That's,
and then they have this,
yeah,
control. Guys like Bill Madden,
yeah, no,
have this control over getting people in. So when I tell them, that's why I'm saying the Hall of Fame is meaningless, because it's created by a bunch of guys who never played the game.
Yeah, I mean, if they could have gotten away with keeping Cobb out, they would have done the same thing to Ted Williams.
No.
He didn't talk to the media for 20 years in Boston. You know, they hated it. He was a war hero.
Yeah.
That while these guys were sitting at their little typewriters being
he
losers,
he was crashed
the
plane. Got him, like, give me another plane.
So, yeah, I mean, I understand your point. I agree with it.
That's
really
why I'm saying it's meaningless.
Yeah.
It's just like I like to have these discussions about, I just think the discussion should be, is this guy a Hall of Famer? Should be, is he one of the greats? Because whether he's a Hall of Famer or not makes no sense, because someday Craig Biggio is going to get into the Hall of Fame. And someday I'm going to have this conversation with my daughter about, like, oh, Craig Biggio is a Hall of Famer. Who's this guy? Wait, so he's in the Hall of Fame. He's better than Barry Bonds? According to the Hall of Fame, he's better than Barry Bonds, right?
Yeah. Well, what's the argument?
Barry Bonds never got suspended from baseball or anything. Never did any. I mean, you can make the argument. Well, no, Pete Rose, there's a rule in the thing. You will get banned for life if you do this.
Right.
He did that, he's banned for life. Same thing with, like, Shoes. So you can at least say that kind of argument. You're going to now say, well, there wasn't really testing in place, and he never failed his test, but he admitted he did the clear, and of course he did steroids, but he's the best hitter that I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, what I heard from a guy that, you know, I know from family who played in the big leagues was the signpost, whatever you want to call it, was they used the word unwelcome in his playing in the late 80s, early 90s, that you know, illicit substances are unwelcome in Major League Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Well, you know, like Jehovah's Witnesses are unwelcome in my house. So I don't know if it means that.
Yeah.
Like, they could still call it
unwelcome.
Yeah, I mean, so I don't know what the rule was on all that stuff. This would be a great conversation, I think, for next week. But I think I'd like to hear your opinions on specific guys going into it. I'd like to hear Neil.
I just think that from now on, when we discuss these guys, I just think that the phrase Hall of Fame means nothing to me. It means nothing.
Yeah.
We just discuss. You want to discuss Jack Moore versus Mike Mussina? That's a discussion to have. Whether they're Hall of Famers to me is meaningless. It doesn't matter. The Hall of Fame is meaningless. It doesn't mean that those are the best guys.
You know what's not meaningless?
What?
That white beater.
Oh, yeah, Neil. God.
He's such a good-looking guy. He's dreamy.
I got a beater on right now, and I still have – I'm not going to call it a Savage tan, but it's still a tan.
Yeah.
It was Savage when I came back from Miami, Neil, and you missed it because we couldn't do the Google Hangout because our producer wasn't here. But, Neil, you killed today's show. You did good, and we didn't let you get in on the Hall of Fame talk because I talk a lot.
Yeah.
But you know what?
Sorry, Neil.
I'm sure you had a lot of good points to make, and maybe next week we'll just let you rant about 5 minutes. Maybe we'll start the show with a five-minute Neil Lynch rant about the Hall of Fame, and then we'll never say the word Hall of Fame again. Can we do that? Can we bury that on the show?
Hey. Paul, are you serious?
There you go. All right, we got 15 seconds left. TriStateSportsGuys.com, at TriState_Sports, Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys. Check us out every Wednesday. According to Matt, we got our best guest ever next week. So tune in. We'll see you next week.